Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, powered by Built Bar. My name is Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. We are on the final draft class recap episode for this week, and it's a short and sweet one. We're talking about the New Orleans Saints. They only made four selections in the 2020 NFL Draft. They picked Cesar Ruiz in the first round, the center from Michigan. That was, I don't want to say a polarizing pick, because Cesar Ruiz is really damn good, so I'm sure that we'll be able to talk about that a lot. They also picked Zach Bond, then in the third round, the linebacker from Wisconsin, Adam Trautman, the tight end from Dayton, and then rounded it out with what I believe is a funny story in the acquisition of getting Tommy Stevens, the quarterback from Mississippi State, in the seventh round. Ben, like I said before, short and sweet class, only four guys. What'd you think of what the Saints did? Already a very talented roster going into the draft. What'd you think of these guys?
Right, the Saints, I liked the Saints draft. The Saints draft was good. It was exciting. It's a great deal. And then they went and made the Tommy Stevens pick, and we learned the story behind the Tommy Stevens pick. And then it really, you know, vaulted into being one of my favorite draft classes. Yeah, man, Jeff Ireland, he knows good football players. And he's not afraid to go get them, which is a super aggressive style of drafting. We keep thinking it's eventually going to bite them in the butt. They keep surviving another year. So listen, as long as you're surviving on the edge, keep living there, I guess.
Look, there's only four picks in this draft, but it's really intriguing to see how they fit on an already really well-established roster. So to help us understand that best, we have Ross Jackson with us on the podcast. He is the host of Locked On Saints. Ross, my man, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, absolutely, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to have me on. Very glad to be here. Love your guys' show. Love all the incredible work that y'all do. Been listening for a while. I was back. I was here when the intro really, really used to hurt, but I went through it anyway. Like, I love it, man. I appreciate everything that y'all do, man.
No, we really appreciate the kind words. And like Ben and I often say, because you started this off with a compliment, that means we're going to have you back on. Well, shoot, we'll make a weekly segment with you if that's how you want to do it, because our egos are so big. But
well, what I mean is that you guys are the best podcast.
Yeah, he's trying to get in on it now. But all right, so four picks, right? It's guys that are pretty well established players that, when you look at it, they can really contribute to the roster right away. And I always think that it's interesting, because we talk about the draft and we always focus on the teams that are rebuilding, right? We go, man, this draft is really important because this team's starting from ground zero. They might have a new quarterback, a new head coach that they're building around. We go, man, they got to get a lot of picks, and the draft really matters to them. The draft also really matters to those teams that are trying to put themselves over the top, and we know that has been the case with the Saints over the last 3 or 4 years. So in your opinion, before we get to honing in on the individual picks themselves, what did you think of the class overall, how the Saints went about it, and how it complements what they've already been really striving for with long playoff runs over the last couple of years?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think that for the Saints, I think that this is kind of one of those, there were kind of two possibilities that many of us discussed going into the draft, was a quality over quantity draft, which was what we ended up seeing, or the potential of maybe trading back, which seems to have been in the cards at one point before they found out a little bit of extra information about the potential of Cesar Ruiz being in the cards for the Miami Dolphins, who selected just two picks behind them, as well as the Kansas City Chiefs, who selected at the end of the round. So there was the potential of trading back that would have made a lot of sense for a very talented roster if they wanted to sort of cast a wider net, maybe, and pick up some more capital to maybe continue to mobilize at other points in the draft. But when they sort of learned what they learned in terms of the intel that they got, as Jeff Ireland talked about not too long ago, they ended up making the decision to just kind of stand pat at 24. And with that, everything else that sort of followed came with them essentially understanding, look, they have, a very talented roster coming into 2020. They did a very good job over the offseason maintaining a ton of pieces from 2019. And even, you know, and they did the same thing going from 2018 to 2019. And they've made the playoffs as a team that's gone 13-3 two straight seasons, and has lost some players, some of which they lost after actually going through the draft, which I'm sure we'll get to in a little bit. But for me, this was a really, really good draft for the Saints to do what they needed to do in order to maintain the success that they've already seen over the past couple of years by upgrading or potentially getting a little bit of what we like to call lanyap in this draft, and then also finding ways to sort of give themselves a little bit of insurance in what could be a truncated and what is already kind of a kooky offseason and training camp heading into the year.
Trunctated and kooky offseason. I
like
that.
Look at the words coming up on this episode. Ben is loving it.
Yeah, well, I've been calling it a truncated offseason. I like the word truncated, but I've never paired it with kooky.
Yeah, as you've often said, you know, truncated.
Let me ask you this, because you alluded to it. Cesar Ruiz, the first round pick, excuse me, for the Saints, a pick where we all said, okay, how is he getting on the field? And then about a week later, they cut Larry Warford. It's like, all right, well, that's how he's getting on the field. This was, I think, a surprising decision for a lot of people who do not closely cover or pay attention to the Saints, because I look at Larry Warford, you know, in my limited scope of not watching his film and say, that's a back-to-back-to-back Pro Bowler. What was necessary here? What were we doing? So why did the Saints feel such a need to replace Warford with Ruiz? Was it the reality of this is our best player on the board and it's just going to be convenient for us to get younger here? Was Warford's play beginning to deteriorate? Was it a cap thing? Why are we – usually we see veteran leave and then draft pick made. This time it was flipped. And so I'm interested as to why this unique circumstance came to pass.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a really odd offseason for the Saints in that the organization was really transparent about this throughout the offseason. And it was kind of strange because you don't usually see sort of a public defamation of a player at any point when it comes to the New Orleans Saints. Sometimes it's hard to even get Sean Payton to say nice things about players. But all of a sudden during the combine, he was out there talking about how, you know, Larry Warford, they're really disappointed in the way that he's played over the last couple of years. So to your question, there was a little bit of a deterioration in terms of his productivity over these last couple of seasons. And you saw that certainly with his, you know, he's always had a little bit of an issue. He's a fantastic power man blocker, but the Saints love to do, you know, love to really go zone run when it comes to Alvin Kamara in particular, right, who they really leaned on a lot last year, even though they had Latavius Murray, even though he was battling some injuries. And so with that being the case, you look at trying to build more speed, build more athleticism, and build more, I'll say explosion, even in terms of, you know, in the framework of testing along that offensive line. And so that really sort of helped the Saints make the decision, who they were apparently really locked on Cesar Ruiz.
Wow, there it is. There it is, folks.
The branding.
Man.
I did what I had to do. No, but, you know, they were really, really into the idea of Cesar Ruiz. The other two players that they were connected to in the first round, Jonathan Taylor picked up a ton of steam right before the draft began, which I wasn't too entirely convinced about, but apparently they were really, really in on him. But they were also connected to Javon Kinlaw and AJ Terrell as well, but they end up being able to land Cesar Ruiz and end up finding a way, because what they'll end up doing with him, more than likely, in terms of the context in which they always speak about him, is always within the context of the center position. So they'll probably plug him at the center position and then take Eric McCoy, who they drafted last year, who played center all season last year and did it pretty well, and then end up shifting him over to right guard, the spot that's now vacated by Larry Warford with his departure.
Yeah, man, them getting McCoy and then them getting Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, I don't understand how the Saints keep doing this. I really don't. I don't understand. And then Zach Bond, I mean, we're going to get to that pick in a second, but before we moved on from the first round, you talked about a couple of guys that they might have had on their radar. I'm curious, what did you think pre-draft? I mean, don't take the fact that, you know, they ended up taking Cesar Ruiz into account, but, like, who did you see them targeting at number four? We talked a lot about potential wide receivers or linebackers. What did you think about their first-round pick and where some other directions, I guess, they could have gone?
Yeah, I was very much in tune with both of you guys in a speedy wide receiver that could be a threat in the intermediate and deep part of the field and can also add a little bit of run after catch. So I liked guys like Jalen Reagor, guys like Brandon Ayuk as well, depending upon how his core muscle surgery went, things like that, things that I don't know, but the team knows. So that was an option for me. But for me, what really, really sort of piqued my interest was more Patrick Queen. And I thought that that's who they were going to, he was on the board at 24, and I absolutely thought that that's who they were going to take. And then, you know, much in Saints fashion, instead they pick a player that most of the casual Saints fans have never heard of before at all. And, you know, I made a lot of jokes before the draft rolled around that, hey, y'all just be prepared for them to take an offensive lineman in this draft in the first round, because it's entirely in their wheelhouse to do so. And they did in Cesar Ruiz. And so I wasn't necessarily disappointed, because as you mentioned, as we opened the episode, Cesar Ruiz is a very good player and I was excited about him. I thought he was going to be off the board at 23, but of course, Los Angeles traded up to take Kenneth Murray at that point. So that ended up making Cesar Ruiz available at 24. So the pick was a bit polarizing because a lot of people had never, you know, a lot of casual Saints fans had never heard of this guy before, but he was a fantastic get. And now that we have the sort of, I'll say the benefit of hindsight, mm-hmm. it makes a lot of sense, right? But in the moment, I think it was confusing for a lot of people who were like, why not take the guy from LSU that's right. literally sitting on the board right there?
Right.
I want to jump here real quick to the Zach Bond pick in the third round because I got weirdly familiar with the Saints linebacking core when I fell in love with AJ Klein during this free agent cycle, which is not important. But DeMario Davis, really good. Kiko Alonso has always had his good flashes and his nice moments, but the health thing is a concern. I thought that second linebacker spot next to DeMario Davis was a sneaking need for the Saints coming into the draft. They do go linebacker, but it is a player in Bond who's viewed more as a Kyle Van Noy hybrid off-ball to on-the-line player than a really true traditional off-ball player. What is their plan for Bond? Are they going to try to get him to be a stack linebacker? It's tough to see exactly how Dennis Allen's defense is going to get him as a full-time edge rusher. Bond was always going to be a guy with a tricky deployment unless he like ended up in New England, and he didn't. So what do you envision the Saints doing with him?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. For when it comes to Bond, and one of the things that he's actually mentioned is his conversations with the new linebacker coach, Michael Hodges, who's taken over now that Mike Nolan is the defensive coordinator in Dallas. And his conversations with Hodges is that they very much are interested in him being sort of that sack linebacker. And Coach Payton, as well as Jeff Ireland, have talked about him in the context of being a Sam and Mike linebacker as well. So they're really interested in sort of transitioning him off of the line of scrimmage and getting him to a place where he's playing as one of those traditional 4-3. Let's start off in 4-3, even though they play mostly base, as most teams in the NFL do these days. But the traditional 4-3 off-ball linebacker, as opposed to one of those guys that's going to end up rushing off the edge. Now, of course, he's going to contribute in the pass rush game, as linebackers often do. And as the Saints, usually as the season wears on, either if they're dealing with injuries to the defensive line or just as the playbook, as they continue to get deeper and deeper into their playbook, they dial up more of those linebacker blitzes as the season progresses. Okay. And so you'll see a little bit of that get mixed in a little bit more throughout the season. But when it comes to where they want to start with him, the big thing and a lot of work that's going to go in during this offseason or whatever version of the offseason we do end up seeing here is going to be getting him into that fit of either that Mike or Sam linebacker, which means he could challenge Alex Anzalone as the incumbent Mike guy to be mm-hmm. that guy that stays on third down and doesn't leave for those nickel sets. Or he could be a guy that steps in early on in his career, depending on how things work out for him, that takes over for Kiko Alonso in that Sam position, because we don't know if Kiko Alonso is going to be healthy enough to start the season at this point because he had that ACL tear in December. So he has a really long way to go, or potentially still has a long way to go at this point in the season to being ready. So no matter what, I think you're going to see Bond on there day one on the field, but it just kind of depends on where he ends up excelling quick enough and where they can get him involved as early as possible, whether it be in coverage or a little bit more of that run stopper mentality, whichever that's going to be, that's where he'll be at the beginning of the season.
We like Zach Bond quite a bit, and I know I definitely did as a rusher as well. I think that he's built well for this Saints defense. And Ben, you know what else is built well?
I hate you.
Oh, there man. It is. So there it is. The transition of all transitions, folks. Because I'm talking about Built Bars. These things are built with 7 times less carbs, 7 times less sugar. Yet all the protein that you would want, whether you are eating this thing before or after a workout, as a meal replacement, you're just throwing it in the middle of your day to kind of curb some hunger as you go on, they got you covered. They've got 15 different flavors to choose from, and they even have more flavors coming. They've got a couple of special deals now from some new bars that they're going to throw into your order if you go online and order right now. And when you do, you can save $10 by using the promo code LOCKEDON. So there's absolutely no reason that you wouldn't punch the promo code locked on into your order unless you just feel like not saving $10, which that's kind of crazy to me. You know, in this economy, not saving $10 seems crazy. That's what you got to do. These bars have better taste, they're better for your macros, and they're going to be better for your overall diet. So head over to BuiltBar.com, get yourself a box, save yourself $10. Ross, do you know the Tommy Stevens story?
Yes, it's literally my favorite story of the offseason.
Okay, Ben has explained it, but for anyone listening to this podcast who maybe knew or didn't listen to the episode that Ben and I recapped this saga, please tell the people in your perspective how this Tommy Stevens selection went down.
Gladly, my friends. So Sean Payton carries a reputation for being a pretty petty guy in the NFL. And it's a proven reputation. That's for certain. I mean, we've seen him destroy fire alarms in or fire handles, you know, pull alarms in visiting locker rooms. We've seen him hang 48 on the Philadelphia Eagles after losing a golf bet. Like, we've seen him do some wild things. And that's not even including the stuff in his locker room. And so when it comes down to the way that this Tommy Stevens saga played out, the Saints very interested in Tommy Stevens, connected to him in a way by Joe Brady, who of course was at Penn State, kind of helped Tommy Stevens develop that little bit of a Swiss Army knife role. That same role ended up transitioning once Joe Brady came to New Orleans into that Taysom Hill role, which is now something that a lot of NFL teams have tried to replicate, and even the Saints themselves are interested in continuing in their offense. Joe Brady, of course, after taking a year with LSU, ends up in Carolina as their offensive coordinator. So there's a little bit of a battle during the draft going on when you're technically, quote unquote, not supposed to be talking to undrafted free agents, but everyone's talking to undrafted free agents, to where they're trying to get Tommy Stevens, who fits this role that has become the Taysom Hill role, super well. Well, while the Saints were having this conversation, the agent of Tommy Stevens stopped taking their phone calls because they seem pretty set on the idea of taking Tommy Stevens to Carolina. So Sean Payton, Jeff Ireland, Mickey Loomis, all those guys, in the usual Sean Payton manner, just simply, you know, put up $80,000 and a six-round pick, $80,000 in that's guaranteed salary that has to go to Tommy Stevens. Right. Put up a six-round pick in 2021 to draft Tommy Stevens. Sean Payton then sends a text message to Joe Brady that says, "Not so fast." So basically,
unbelievable.
And he texts Stevens and his agent and goes, "I'm done asking. Right. Now I'm taking." Referring to a whole person.
Entire human being. And so it's wild because really Sean Payton just spent a future six-round pick, which they expect to get a compensatory pick for the aforementioned A.J. Klein earlier in this episode, who is now with the Buffalo Bills. They expect to get a compensatory pick there. But they also spent $80,000 just to stick it to Joe Brady. Who, of course, like Joe Brady's made a reputation for himself using large elements, if I'm being kind, of Sean Payton's offense. And so there's a lot of, I don't want to say animosity, but there's a lot of, you know, back and forth between these two guys. And I can't wait to see them in game form come week seven, because it's going to be a lot of fun to watch that.
So real quick on Stevens then, because I wrote about this pick, and my thing is, I can get him on the field on special teams, because that was the whole thing with Hill, is that it's easy to keep him on the roster because your QB3 doesn't typically contribute on special teams, and he did, and then his role continued to grow. Even with Hill there, they can roster Stevens because he'll be a special teams player for them. Is there a way to get him on the field in year one, do you think, on actual offense, or will he just be, you know, like punt gunner, up man, something like that?
It's a tough thing because before even getting to that point, they have to figure out where the hell his roster spot comes from. Because are they going to carry four quarterbacks? You know what I mean? And then if they do that, then do they give up an offensive lineman, a defensive lineman, or a player in the secondary with the injuries that they've dealt with and the challenges of depth that they've had in the recent years?
And they can't practice squad him, right? Because somebody's just going to steal him.
That's the thing. Right. I would love for this to end with Sean Payton cutting him. I'm gonna be honest with you, dude.
That's 100% what I'm expecting. I'm 100% expecting Sean Payton to have done that, to cut Tommy Stevens. He'll go to the waiver wire. More than likely, Carolina will pick him up.
Right.
But then Joe Brady won't have an offseason to game plan for Tommy Stevens and actually get him involved into the offense. So it just is gonna kind of set them back. So really, to me, this is like a six-round pick and an $80,000. I'm gonna make your life a little bit more inconvenient than it has to be, because I really don't see him making the roster in 2020.
My last question for you, Ross, with the Saints basically having no day three picks, they do spend the Tommy Stevens picks that we went through. But my final question for you concerns the UDFAs that the Saints brought in. With such a small draft class, I think there's a better chance that a UDFA makes the roster than maybe in previous years for the Saints. Obviously, it's a stacked group. But of the undrafted free agents they brought in, who do you think is the most likely to make the roster and why?
Yeah, I think that probably one of the guys, there's a couple of these undrafted free agents that I really like, but one of the guys that has very likely the most immediate path to the roster goes back to that linebacker position that we were talking about earlier. And it's with Joe Bocci. Joe Bocci out of Michigan State is somebody that everybody expected to be drafted. I certainly did. I thought at the least he was maybe a fifth rounder, you know, a middle of day three kind of a guy, because he did have the PED suspension and things like that. Ends up falling out of the draft. But for the Saints, you know, they have their three starters that we discussed in DeMario Davis, Alex Anzalone, and now Zach Bond. We don't know if Kiko Alonso is going to be ready, so I'm not going to count him. And then they have a Chase Hansen in the back that was on the NFI list and never got to do anything with the team last year, who's coming back for the season. But outside of that, they've got Caden Ellis they drafted in the seventh round last year, and Craig Robertson, who's been an outstanding special teamer and depth linebacker for them. So they have a sixth linebacker spot open if Kiko Alonso is not ready at the beginning of the season, and that is all ready for the taking for a guy like Joe Bocci, who can play that Sam position and can be that run-stopping force. We've seen him. He's a fantastic tackler. We've seen it on tape. And he would have gone over 100 tackles 3 years in a row had it not been for that PED suspension, I'm willing to guess, when I think he finished up with just over 70 in 2019. So he's a guy. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Calvin Throckmorton, just because of the depth that the Saints do need
simply
on the offensive line.
Simply because of his name?
Calvin and his name as well. As long as they have enough of the little letters amongst him and and Gus Cumberlander and all these other guys that are on this roster, sure.
They're going to be leaking into the shoulder pads.
Yeah, exactly. The jersey manager goes to Peyton's like, you can't roster them both. I don't have enough O's.
He's sweating. He's like in his undershirt. He's like his white undershirt. He's just sweating. He's got suspenders on. He's like, Sean, we can't keep this
we
guy.
Don't have the technology.
We don't have the numbers.
I'll give you your $80,000 back if you hold roster. Yeah. No, but he's another guy that I do think has the chance. But those are probably the top two for me.
Man, stats, steals, and stories, all courtesy of Ross Jackson, who is the host of Locked On Saints podcast. Ross, thank you so much for joining us, man. This was a blast. We really appreciate it. Before we let you go, make sure you tell all the people where they can find your great work.
Absolutely, man. Thank you again very much for having me on, guys. Again, love the show. Keep up the great work. Such a blast to listen to every day. Appreciate y'all very much. Y'all can find me on Twitter at Ross Jackson NOLA, NOLA. And of course, you can find the Locked On Saints podcast wherever it is that you listen to your favorite podcast. And you can catch everything that I write over at Canal Street Chronicles as well, which is brought by SB Nation. So thanks again, guys. Really had a blast chatting with you.
Yeah, no, we really did as well. That's all the draft class recaps for this week. Fan Friday coming up next. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.